Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Up the Poshcast. We're coming to you after another defeat. It was Wigan 2, Peterborough United 0. I was joined tonight by Ashley, Dell, Max. I'm Harry. We discussed the players. We discussed the performance. There are patterns emerging. How do we break those patterns? Well, one of them might be with new signings. We also discussed Matthew Garber and Tom Lees, who have come in through the door. We moved on to the Barnsley game, which is coming up on Tuesday, and our hopes and dreams for that. And we also discussed at the end of the episode the women's game and their first league match of the season, which was attended by some of the podcast hosts. A few notices. Firstly, well done to the 9 people who correctly predicted that we would lose 2-0 to Wigan Athletic in the Next Level Barbell Club Predictions League. We put in our predictions for the upcoming Barnsley game in this at the end of this episode, which you can watch. And we had a special guest from a certain YouTuber give their prediction. I'd like to thank the sponsors of this episode, our partners, Smith's Hyundai. They have a state-of-the-art showroom down on Breton Way, which is open 7 days a week. If you're thinking of changing your vehicle, consider a new or used Hyundai from Smith's Motor Group. Even if you want to go in and just have a chat with them, they've got an award-winning showroom and they're great down there. Just go in, have a chat. Maybe you might think about a vehicle purchase for the future. I'd also like to thank our donation that we've had this week from Andrew Hinton. As ever, we really, really appreciate it. It goes so far to helping us run the pod. There are significant costs associated with it, and we want to keep giving a product to you, the fans, that you deserve. And these donations really help with that. Thank you, Andrew. And with that, enjoy the episode.
In Peterborough, match day starts long before kickoff. And whether you're heading to the pub, the ground, or just tuning into the podcast, Hyundai gets you there in comfort, style, and with room for your mates. Visit Smith's Hyundai, your local Hyundai experts and proud supporters of Up the Poshcast.
Right then, Wigan 2, Peterborough United 0. Ashley, talk me through the game.
I am beyond the point of being frustrated at this team. I said it last night when I was going through on Twitter, is that I actually sympathise with these players now. It's just very clear that they're a little bit away from the level that they need to be. That's not ultimately their fault. I think that that's a fault of the recruitment, fault of the manager, fault of the coaching, and then ultimately a fault of the ownership as well, from leaving us as short as we are. The baffling thing is that we are surprised by this. We're chasing our tails with 2 weeks left. But I don't want to hash over old ground like you guys discussed against Accrington, but we were bang average pretty much between box and box, moving the ball around. We had the possession, but we offered nothing in the Wigan box, and they basically had the ball in our box twice and scored twice. It's obviously a totally different game, I think, if Keller puts the ball into the back of the net from that corner. But it's not a game of if, buts and maybes. It's a game of facts. And we're going to have beaten us 2-0. I wasn't surprised by it. And it's another game where I just think, actually, if we'd have looked at it at the start of the season with our track record at Wigan, would we have expected a result? Probably not. So I don't want to be defeated, but I am trying to be more realistic in my expectations and approach to the game until we have these additional players come through the door.
I'm with you on that, because I don't think we was particularly bad. I generally don't. I just think you can't fault the effort from the players yesterday. You know, they all put a shift in. They all tried the best. And is it that they're just not good enough, most of them? When you look around our team, I think we have a lot of similarity We don't have that flair that we used to have. We just seem to have a really big squad, and it is quite a big squad now because we're signing this player, signing that player, and it just seems a little bit flat. No sort of flair or anything. Potentially, we'd probably be a really good League Two side, but we're in League One, and we're just not cutting the mustard. You know, every team we have played, I thought we done okay against Cardiff, for example, but you could see the quality that they've got compared to what we've got, you know, and we just don't have that quality. So can we blame the players? I don't think we can anymore. I think we, as you say, we've got to blame someone. Is we're not picking the right people to play for Peterborough United. What used to work in the past is not working anymore. You know, we are trying to pick out non-league, League Two players to come and be the best in League One, and they're the best in their divisions because that's where they are. That's their peak. So yeah, we really need to get some, some proper quality through the door. And why we're doing our planning now when we should have done it pre-season? What Fergie's come out and said, you know, De Havilland, what's his name, Keeper, Blackmore, Conclark, whoever, are available for transfer. Why now and what not the start of the season? Surely there's not much you can learn in pre-season, you know. Just not how it is. I just don't think we've planned well enough for this season. But I can't really fault the players too much. I thought they put the effort in. And maybe we should have lost, but if we had, like, we're just not creating, and that is a frustrating thing. We're just not creating. You know, you got Hayes running down the wing, doing okay, but just the final ball's just not there. And yeah, we just seem to be signing the same old average players, and we need a spark because I can't see where the next win's coming from. And I'm not going to keep blaming the players. They're just not up to it at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. It's one where I don't think we were completely played off the park, but I also am with you, Dale. We don't see... It's not like it was a performance to build on. We had one shot on target, a relatively well-struck shot from Hayes that went out for a corner. But outside of that, we just simply aren't threatening enough. And while we're not being completely steamrolled by any of these teams, we are equally not really laying a glove on anyone. And teams will just be able to manage us out of games. You get one goal against us, maybe a second to give yourself some security. And there's just no way this team right now is coming back from 2-0 down in the way that they're playing. I think that we lack some competitive intensity that I wonder if it's to do with a lack of intensity of pre-season. I think we're going to regret having only played, you know, a game against Leicester, fine. Game against Ipswich behind closed doors, fine. But we needed to test our first team against some proper quality in pre-season, I think, for them to realise that there was more work here than needed being done. And drawing to Colchester wasn't the wake-up call. Only just scraping past MK Dons wasn't the wake-up call. They realise now that they need more players in, and there's going to be people going. I think that it's potentially a little bit harsh on a couple of them, but I can't disagree that there's got to be some new faces in for us to have a chance. I predict us to be relegated. I don't take any pleasure in that currently looking like it's right. I really, really hope I'm wrong and the new faces in the door end up meaning that we course correct.
Right, I'm going to try and be positive because I actually thought that performance, considering our last handful of games, was good in comparison. I agree with a lot of what Harry's just said and a lot of what other people have said already tonight, that the quality is not good enough. The players probably aren't good enough for this level, and we need some change. However, there was a lot of positive that I thought for the last 20 or so minutes, 30 or so minutes, I think we really did give Wigan a game. And although we didn't create shots on target, you know, per se, I think we really did give Wigan a game. And this Wigan team is going to be pushing for promotion. If not, it's definitely a playoff contender. And I don't think there's a single Peterborough fan that would say that's where we are at the moment. So I think overall as a performance, and again, as Harry has said, you know, we're not getting battered by any of these teams. I think that's a real positive to take as well. We're not we're not going out and getting absolutely played off the park and battered week in, week out. You know, that first half against Luton, I didn't think there was anything in it. The first half against Cardiff, I didn't think there was anything in it. The second half, you know, two goals from an inability to defend set pieces into the box, or balls into the box for that matter. But the second half, I don't think there was anything in it against Wigan. The only game I've looked at and I've walked away extremely disappointed by so far has been Accrington Stanley, and that was completely and utterly embarrassing. So I think there's a lot of positive to take from the Wigan game in terms of a base to build on. And ultimately, I think there's a chance that with players in the door and we've been promised ruthlessness in the transfer market, I think there's a good chance that we're only going to improve.
You know, I think we'll move on to the players now. Just an example of what I've already said is we're just signing same old players like Reyes yesterday. Not Reyes yesterday, but Reyes. Is he an upgrade on Bilo? Is he an upgrade on Blackmore? I'm not convinced that he is. You know, so yeah, we've got somebody else on the wage bill who I don't think is any different to Bilo. What a waste of money. Unless it's 100% an upgrade, why waste that time? Is my opinion, especially on a loan player. So that's an example of what I'm on about. I would send Reyes back and I'd keep Bilo going until mate is back.
Yeah, Del, I think that the issue with Reyes and Bilo in particular, like you say, there was obviously that moment with Reyes quite early on in the game where he came out of his box, let the ball bounce over his head, and then all of a sudden had his back to the player and just about grabbed it. I think that the issue with Bilo is that we are now trying to do what I mentioned a couple of weeks back and actually protect his value and protect him, because putting him a goal now after Luton is not going to do anybody any favours. And actually being a goalkeeper in this posh team, I think, is probably one of the hardest positions to play, especially when you've only been here for 2 weeks. We've seen Bilo struggled with it for what, nearly 2 years now. Jed wasn't amazing at it, but he's got that experience to know how to mould himself to fit a game. And ultimately, I've said before, haven't I, is that the last good goalkeeper and ultimately successful goalkeeper I would put down long term would be Christy Pym. Hopefully, Alex Bass is there or thereabouts in the next 2 weeks or so. He'll come in and then Reyes will merely be a sub, so that if Alex Bass does get injured again, that we've got that substitute ready to go. But like you say, is he totally different? I'm not entirely sure he is, but we did have those warning signs from the fact that we have already put 6 past him at our London Road Stadium. The next man that I want to talk about is a man that ultimately I think he's the leader that we needed yesterday. He stood there at the end of the game and was annoyed, I would say, at some of the reactions from the fans. But he was that leader, and that he was happy to stand at the front, and I mentioned it again like last night, is that he was somebody that was there at Bristol Rovers, and I'm guilty of losing my head at a game, but I explained that well enough. Anybody that's not seen it can go back to my thread last night, or Saturday I should say. But I think he put in a good performance, and actually we are starting to see maybe why we did have a signing in Carl Johnston, because I don't think he's let anybody down yet this season. He's never going to be the flamboyant player and the flair player. He struggles to get forwards and take up the correct spaces, but he does put a shift in, and he got moved to left back for the second half and he did a job there again. He supported his team. He defended relatively well. There are a few times where he was body shape and slightly out of position, but you're going to get that if you're moving from the right side of the pitch across to the left-hand side, and then you're playing another 45 minutes there. So I wasn't overly disappointed with either the goalkeeper. I think that he did his job for the second goal, and he wasn't helped by his teammates letting the ball drop in. The first goal as well is a free header, and people were trying to blame CJ for not getting up. And I think it was Sadie that scored the first. I think it's incredibly harsh. Ultimately, that comes down to some poor positioning from our centre-backs rather than CJ. You can't blame him for being, 5'4" and being beaten to a header by a bloke that's got a foot on him, and he's a massive bloke. So no issues with either of those two players, really, from me.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I think, frankly, credit to CJ for refusing to in any way shy off from a bit of criticism from some of the fans who were there and stared him down. And I think said a choice word back to him as well. And I respected that. It's a very different situation to perhaps previous times where people have had a go at the players. And fundamentally, I think we all know these guys aren't that good. And they're still, it's not a lack of application. I think there were times last season where there was a lack of application. I don't think any of us are accusing them of that. Who else do I want to speak on? If we talk on the centre-backs, Akagwe, I can't make my mind up yet. It's really hard to tell whether he is... he was obviously at fault for the corner at Luton, but was he at fault for either of the goals against Wigan? I'm not sure he was, but then I'm also wondering, were there enough chances, or were there so many chances for Wigan in part because of his performance? I found it quite difficult to judge. I gave him a 6 in my ratings because I'm not seeing any clangers out of him. I think his passing range is a little bit short at the minute, and he's fine with the unpressured short passes, but anything into midfield or longer, he's not got the most natural technique when it comes to swinging his leg for that, for those longer passes. But he's done all right, I suppose. Let's hope he can keep kicking on. I appreciate the guy's only 21. Volin, just bullied, not physical enough, a disaster in both boxes. Was the moment Mills was beaten, and people might make the argument that it was Mills' fault more than anyone for the first goal. But as a centre-back and as a leader, someone who held the armband on Tuesday night, once the left-back's been beaten, you need to make that decision instantly and without hesitation, whether you go out or you stay. And the intensity or lack thereof of him going out to try and block that cross left us completely exposed in the middle for the first goal, with CJ trying to stop a header from Sadie. It was only going to end one way. Same problem at the end. In the attacking end, where when the ball bounces up in the air, Wallin's not creating any leverage on any of the players. He just jumps up, and the ball either hits his head or it doesn't. But either way, it's not helping the attack. He desperately needs to strengthen up, toughen up, if he's going to make it at this level. I'm still not convinced he will in the long term.
Well, I've got to jump in with Wallin because I actually rated him quite highly. Now, as I said earlier, I don't think the players are as good as what they should be for League One. Now, I'm based some of my ratings on their ability, if that makes sense. And I actually thought, with Wallin yesterday, we can't fault his commitment. You can't fault the effort. He was trying to do the sort of a be everywhere role, which goes down to a lot to naivety, because, yeah, as you said, should he have been out there quicker? Maybe. But the fact is, he went out there. Mills lost his man. There's two players out there. He had to go and do something, which then left the space in the middle. Where was the sort of the older generation, as in, what's his name, CJ, demanding where his defence went, etc.? I actually don't think Wallin is as bad as everybody's making out at the moment. I do know that he's got a few mistakes in him and his decision making ain't great, but I think from yesterday's performance, I don't think anybody can question his commitment to sort of literally trying to put his body on the line. I know he's not the best, and I'll keep harping on, but I just need to give him a little bit of credit where it's due. I actually think he's potentially been one of our most consistent players this season in these last four games. And you know, that's quite a big accolade to say, because we have got some good players, and it just shows that how poor we are as a team that I'm picking someone like Wallin having a better season than anybody else so far. So, yeah, I'm going to defend him a bit. I know he had a few mistakes here and there, but overall, it's what it is. Don't even know what to say. Just come on. It's got to come good, isn't it?
Yeah, though I think that the issue is, I'm not going to disagree that actually the first three games he probably has been our best player overall from those. But you mentioned that he put his body on the line. He ultimately didn't. If he'd have put his body on the line, he would have gone through the player, got absolutely crunched one way or another, and then we wouldn't have conceded. That, I think it's as simple as that. He hasn't done that. Second half, the only body he put on the line was Costello's, which probably should have been a penalty. He ultimately had a rotten performance yesterday. And like I said, I'm trying not to be too harsh with my ratings and trying to just temper expectations. But to say that he had a good game yesterday is wrong, in my opinion.
I'll take that.
Just want to circle back very briefly to a Cogboy, because I actually think he's been probably our one of our best players this season. And I'm really enjoying watching him play. I think there's a lot of his game that's still raw. And I think his game's going to exponentially improve under Sam Hughes. It's going to be such a big improvement. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that and having Sam Hughes sort of mentor him and show him how to play, just like he did with Wallin. Because remember, you know, Sam Hughes made Wallin look extremely good for 9 games in a row. And he'd look calamitous next to Manny Fernandez before that. So I think a Cogboy who's probably better than Wallin is going to just improve even more. The player I really want to talk about is Mills. I think we put Mills in an extremely harsh position. We've just given him a 4-year contract. He's got no left back behind him because Rio Adepisi is still injured. He's got no rotational options. He's expected to play 90 minutes week in, week out. I mean, he's so young and he's got such a massive responsibility. And, you know, Johnston yesterday, we saw him axed at halftime, which is going to do nothing for his confidence, A, and then people on social media slating him, B. It's going to do nothing for that, nothing for his confidence. And obviously Johnston came over, JD came on, and I thought that was fine. But to me, if anything, I thought it was harsh for Mills to be axed so early. I didn't think actually he was that terrible. He obviously made a few mistakes, but ultimately those mistakes are things that's going to happen to a player of his youth. And having no left back in behind him is simply astounding to me. If anything, it shows that we desperately need another fullback in, because I don't think we can play Mills every single game for the rest of the season. And we've given him this big deal where he wants to come on, he wants to prove himself. And to me, him doing this and dedicating, he must be knackered playing 4 games. Like, I know what people are saying, like he's a professional footballer and his fitness and whatever, but he's never had this sort of strain of games before and this run of games. Really, he came on in the Virtue Trophy a few times, covered for Theo Edin when he got sent off, and then played at Wembley. Like, it wasn't like he played every single game last season. This is his first season, and he's been thrown into a season that we're seeing a lot of similarities from last year. So I think it's extremely harsh on Mills. And I think we need another fullback, because even if Mills isn't as good as what we thought he was, which I don't agree with, I think he's got a fantastic ceiling. I think he needs someone to rotate with him. A, because if Mills gets injured, we've got no left back. It'll have to be Johnston and Dornelli, and then we're out of fullback option. And B, to manage his minutes and to not do what we did with James Dornelli, where he started really well and got really bad later on because he lost that confidence.
Fine balance, right? As you've just explained, Max, do we keep Mills out there or do we take him off a little bit earlier to help his development one way or the other? Well, subbing him at half time probably isn't going to do a lot for his confidence. I thought it was extremely harsh, and he was behind the fullback killer in Abraham Odo, who just makes it extremely difficult for anyone trying to support him. I don't like doing this every week, but a few neat little dribbles aren't enough to be a positive influence on a performance. We usually, when we go through these player summaries, we start with the defence, we go to the midfield, but let's link in Mills and Odo. What was Mills meant to do with what Odo was offering him against Wigan? He was repeatedly making the wrong decision going forward, whether it be dribbling or his passing. He was just insipid. He got beaten off the ball more than once. The same stuff that we saw against Cardiff, the same stuff that we saw against Luton, the same stuff we saw against Accrington. I just really, really want to see Odo perform well. And I'm here once again digging the guy out. But I don't want to, but I can't help but think he had an influence on Mills' performance yesterday. Mills is willing going forward. He's the most willing out of the three of them, if you include CJ and Dornelli on the other side. And what could he do yesterday with what was in front of him from the winger?
Yeah, I agree. I do want to see Odo performing back at his best, but that best was being at Crawley, but who knows what will happen with that. Rotating back to the midfield. I think I really want to talk about Keller's performance, because I left the stadium after the game and was chatting to a fan, and I asked him what he thought of Keller's performance, and he said Keller was one of the worst players on the pitch. And I couldn't believe it because I thought actually he was very good yesterday. And it seems like I'm the only person that thinks that. I thought Keller's creativity in the second half, whilst he gave Lisby all the balls to run onto, and Lisby got my man of the match. Having Keller behind him there, and I don't particularly know what midfield position he was playing, because right now our midfield's all over the place. I can't tell if we're playing with 10. I can't tell if we're playing with 2 8s. I can't tell if we're playing with a 6 and 2 8s. I just don't know what's going on. But whatever role Keller was playing, I thought he played it well in terms of going forward. I think there's still a lot to learn in his defensive performance, but he has an engine, doesn't he? And that's something that I've been really impressed with over these four games. He could play 90 minutes for the whole season, I think. The way that he can sprint across, make a challenge, get back up, return back to his position and continue to run at people. He can lead a press. It's exactly what you want in terms of stamina and engine in that midfield. And I think we've got a real player there in terms of that engine and that desire and that stamina. He really wants to prove himself. And that's something that I really like, that hunger. And I think going forward, he was crucial to us sort of trying to give that Wigan an onslaught of pressure, maybe try and force a mistake to get a shot on target. You saw we had one shot with Hayes, but that was in that stint. That's clearly what we were trying to do, pin Wigan back and force an error. That didn't come because Wigan have got some really good experience. But I think if he can work on this defensive side of the game, I think he's going to be a real player for us, because honestly, that creativity going forward, or at least partnership with Lisby, was something that really impressed me.
Yeah, do you know, I think the issue with Brandon Keller is that he's trying to do too much and he's trying to take all the responsibility on his shoulders. And that's not fair on him. And it probably is negatively impacting his performances because he is one man and it's a team of 11. And that's the game, ultimately. I'd like to see him supported more by the two that are alongside him. I don't think that Archie Collins was particularly fantastic yesterday. I don't think that Archie Collins has been particularly fantastic all season. Ultimately, I think that he's clearly got other things on his mind, but that's sort of where we're at, isn't it? I think that Keller is above the other two and the other two aren't performing well enough.
It's such a good point about how Max just said it. You've just said it another way, Ashley. Where is the structure for this three? Who is meant to be, what are the triggers for them in their defensive actions, in their passing actions, and in their progressive movements? We've seen it with fullbacks where the winger will cut in. It's a clear thing that Fergie's coached. These three, where are we seeing the chemistry yet? Where are the obvious patterns of progression between them?
This is actually a really good point, Harry, because I thought we saw one of O'Brien Brady's better performances in a Peterborough shirt yesterday. And I thought that's his best role. What it looked like to me was playing the six. But why is it taking us four games of the season to get him here? I mean, he's been playing a very advanced eight. He's been leading the press in the 10. He's been playing all over the place. We saw his best preseason performance was against Leicester when he was sat in between the two centre-halves and driving the ball forwards. That was, in my opinion, his best preseason performance. And it was in that position in the six. Why are we now trying to make him play in the 10? And then Keller's been playing the 10, or at least that's what I've been thinking. Again, the structure in that midfield is all over the place. I really don't know who's playing where. But it seemed like Keller was playing in the 10.
It's the 24, Max. You just add 6, 8 and 10 and just throw it all three of them. You are the 24, you three. Go and just play a game of football.
Just seemed so lost. And that's why we're seeing teams just run through us, because there doesn't seem like there's any sort of pressure to stay in position. Any desire to want to play that position, or it just feels like everybody's roaming around and playing whatever position they want. And until we find some sort of structure, we get some discipline, because that's what this midfield needs, some discipline. That was the word I was trying to think of. Is we need some discipline. And ultimately, until we can figure out which midfielder plays where, and our new signing, which we'll talk about in a moment, who isn't going to help with that discipline, considering he can play all three, it has to improve, because otherwise teams are just going to run through us and it's going to be really easy.
Yeah, look, running through people is all well and good, isn't it? And I don't think that Wigan dominated us, like I said earlier, but we're missing that final element. And I think that the person that does sum that up ultimately is Kean Hayes. This is a man that, contrary to Harry's popular belief, I do want to succeed at Posh. I don't want him to fail. But until he can put the ball into the box and find a man, how can I rate these performances? It's like you go out for dinner and then they don't cook your steak for you. You just get given a slab of meat. That's what Hayes' performances are. Like, he's not cooking his performances well enough and putting the ball in the box for the man that is there. Like, everybody's blaming Brad for not offering anything, but he's having nothing given to him. When he did start to get stuff given to him, it was too late in the game and he'd probably given up because he was knackered, chasing endless balls, poor balls into the channels. I don't know what it is with Hayes. It was discussed pre-season that he knows what his issues are, but he can't quite get it right in his head and have the confidence to do it. I think the last two times that he's played on the left-hand side and not done the cut-ins, actually he's started to look a little bit better, but still no final ball. We went a whole game yesterday where we had no final ball from Kean Hayes. It can't continue like this. And I don't want to sort of say, because I'd like Kean Hayes to play, but I liked the diamond that we played against Accrington. I think that it worked. That means that you can't play Hayes because Hayes is not a diamond fit.
I agree. It wasn't that great from Hayes yesterday. I accept. The endeavour's always there with the dribbling. The end product wasn't really there. Hey, at least got a shot away. I respected him for trying. And on a different day, he hits it a little bit more powerfully or a little bit higher up and it goes in. But still not there, unfortunately. But I thought he played well against Accrington. So there we go. That's something to put in the back pocket. Brad, really, really disappointing to see him perform like he did against Luton, which was just, again, largely out of the game. I mean, my stock in Brad remains high. I think he played so well against Cardiff that we see there's clearly a talent there. But he wasn't getting into the box in the right moments. He didn't contribute really with headers. There was a moment, you may recall, in the second half when he got through and he had an opportunity to pass and he just completely messed it up. And he really, really could have like opened up the playing. And I think that could have ended in a goal. And there was another moment where it was unfortunate, where he did make the right run and it got pulled back for a foul. But outside of that, I did score him the lowest rating on the pitch yesterday because I felt like he was anonymous and we need more from Peter United's number nine. It's pretty much, you know, if I was to pick the three most important positions in a Darren Ferguson system, the number nine is in the top three, no doubt about it. It's a real shame.
Yeah, I actually agree with you a bit there, Harry. I'm a big Brad lover. Yeah, he is feeding off scraps. The balls are just so rubbish. There's nothing for him to run onto. You know, there's no final ball for him. And I can see him getting frustrated. I can see him getting more frustrated as games come on if this is a pattern of play. Sometimes you do have to put yourself in a better position. And I think a frustration for him is a big, big area. But I just do want to move on to the other side of talk about Lisby. Again, there's a little bit of flair coming from there, which is good to see. I think I rated him as my man in the match yesterday. I can't remember. I think I did. You know, that's 24 hours ago. But it's hard to explain. But Lisby, when we signed him, if I remember rightly, we was told he's one for the future, not right straight away. Is that right? But yet here he is, playing in every game so far this season. So that, for me, just shows the state that we have got our team at the moment. If we sign Lisby to be one for maybe next season, but he's already lighting the thick of it and having man of the match performances, doesn't help us to where we are with our squad. But I actually thought we had a good game yesterday. Let's hopefully it's more to come from him.
Yeah, do you know what? I think the issue is that we are really struggling with shiny thingitis. And the performances for 60 to 70 minutes are so poor at the moment that anybody that comes off on the bench is going to be an improvement. We saw it Tuesday night. We saw it at Cardiff. We saw it a little bit against Luton and we saw it again yesterday. I don't think that it's actually a reflection of the player themselves. Look, Lisby was exciting yesterday. He won us lots of corners that we then wasted. But I think that's more a reflection of how poor the previous 60 minutes were before Lisby came onto the pitch.
You mentioned there that I think when you say Lisby was signed to be one for the future, yes, a future starter, he's going to come on off the bench and replace players and develop. We're not just going to leave him on the bench or send him to the under-21s for a year. You know, he's going to come to games. He's going to come and try and make an impact, prove himself. And then he's one for the future in terms of starting. And I think that's really key in terms of his development, is that we're allowing him to come off the bench, giving him 25 minutes, 20 minutes. I think that's fine. I don't see an issue with that. And actually, I thought it was fantastic when he came on yesterday. He got my highest rating, a 7.5, when we've lost 2-0 away from home. And I'm miserable. A 7.5 was what I gave him. And I think that is a true reflection on his performance, because I thought it was great. Another great performer was Lolos. I was really impressed with him. I gave him a 6.5. When we signed Chris Conn-Clark, what did we want? When we saw him in pre-season, when we saw him play that game where unfortunately he did a shoulder, what we wanted was a maverick, was someone that was going to take it on and do it himself. And Lolos showed yesterday against Wigan that that's the type of character that he is. He's got a bit of arrogance. He's got a bit of swagger. He wants to get on the ball. He wants to make things happen. And that's something that I really like in that performance from Lolos. He came in, he sat one defender down and he's popped a shot off. I can't remember the last time somebody had done that this season. We haven't seen that yet. A little drag back of the ball. It's just that sort of simple skill, you know. And that ball roll, sending the defender, sort of reminded me a little bit of Poku. Not at the speed and the pace and the technique of Poku, but any sort of skill at this rate reminds me of that man. I miss him. But it was a fantastic effort, at least, to get the shot away. And if he's going to do that more and more as his fitness increases, I know there was a lot of questions from Bolton about what have you signed him, and our fan base going into a bit of tatters. I think when he gets his match fitness up, if he's going to play like that every week, I think it's a good investment. And if he can find his form that he had at Crawley, we've got a real player on our hands. And I think he proved that yesterday, that there's definitely something that he can do to be better.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it'll be an exciting signing in time. I think that he just needs to be given that time, ultimately. And whether that's over the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks just to get his fitness up, then so be it. One man that I have been quite impressed with over the last two games has been James Dornelli. Don't really think that he's let anybody down. He's done his task. There were a few questions in pre-season. Obviously, he gave away a penalty at Grimsby, didn't he? He let a few balls go over his head, and that's always been one of his weaknesses. But when he's come on and he's played, he's not been disappointing. So I can't complain with James Dornelli. And like you said earlier, Max, James Dornelli has benefited from being taken out of the team and being able to learn from a more experienced player, which is exactly where I think that we are with Harley Mills. Like exactly what you said, is that he needs help. I don't think that Adebisi is going to be that. We've gone from Adebisi will take part in pre-season to Adebisi will be back at the start of August. He'll be back at the start of September. Now he's not going to be playing games with the 21s until the end of September. There's a real chance that we just simply never see Adebisi play for Posh again, which will be a real shame off the back of it. Even more so just for Harley Mills himself. He needs somebody to learn from. And I think that Adebisi would be perfect for that.
Right. I think we're there on the player performances. Let's give Wigan their fair due, because they were pretty good. I thought they managed the game really well. Anyone who watched the final whistle Accrington Stanley sum up knows that I talked about the fact that Accrington Stanley had 130 passes, 120 of which were forward. Got stats here for the Wigan game. Well, guess what? Wigan had 144 passes, 109 of which were forward. We've been beaten by direct football once again. And for the second game in a row, we've had over 400 passes. Approximately 25% of them were forward. We had 70% possession. We actually had more shots, although fewer on target. Anyone who was there knows there was no moment in the game, really, where we looked like we were going to get back into it, I don't think. I don't know if anyone else wants to comment on the performance. I'd just say, maybe just briefly, Wigan are so much further ahead in terms of implementing their plan. Three at the back, really direct forwards, not afraid to lump it up over the top. but also just really strong precision when moving out to the channels. And that's how they got their first goal, and also picking up the scraps for their second goal. Top to bottom, every Wigan player did their job as they're meant to, and you could see the plan.
Sorry, Harry, I just want you to say that again, that Wigan only made 144 passes in 90 minutes of football. Absolutely, yeah. Baffling. Like, I am a big fan of the way that football is played. I like it. I like that it's like chess now. It's maybe not as exciting as the kamikaze football that we used to play, but to have only made 144 passes, and ultimately we never troubled them, even though we made 400 plus. That's the concern, is that, like I said way back at the start, we've got to simply find a way to do better in both 18-yard boxes. Wigan were efficient. They did what they needed to do. But I don't think there's a great deal more than that, because ultimately we never challenged them. And that's the issue, right?
Yeah. It's going to get skewed by a couple of things. One is that they went up two goals so early on, so they could just sit in. And to be honest, they weren't even that negative afterwards, but they allowed us to have 70% possession after that without really laying a glove on them. So they just had the ball less. And that's always going to make a difference. But what version of Peterborough United exists where we can win a game with 30% possession, right? What version of Peterborough United exists where we can have fewer than 150 passes total in a game, over 100 of them going forward? Because that's what our last two teams we've played have beaten us with.
Yeah, and to really sum up the Wigan performance and sort of where they were at, is that Archie Collins shot second half, is that the ball made its way past Tickle and there was three of them. They were just there, ready to put their bodies on the line. And that just looks like something that we are so far from. The players are clearly bought into what Ryan Lowe is offering. And despite, obviously, Carragher has got that injury and they'd taken Sessegnon out and he didn't play, I don't think, yesterday, they still knew what they were doing and they'd made changes, and they just looked, like you said, Harry, just drilled. And they knew exactly what their role was. They wanted to fight for each other. We've heard before at the start of the season that all of these players really like each other at Posh and that they really enjoy each other's company. But they need to start showing it, I think. And where they maybe let themselves down in ability, actually putting their bodies on the line, like Dell referenced to with Wallin, potentially doing it, potentially not doing it. If they start putting their bodies on the line properly, like they really mean it, then we'll start to see improvements, I think.
No, it definitely has been against boys. The more experienced players can manage a game, whereas we're scared of what to do. It looks we're scared to go forward. We're scared to make a decision in case it goes wrong. Going back to what you just said there, Ash, and me saying about wanting to put his body in the line, I remember commenting about Cardiff game where I don't think we defended very well, but we really was putting our body on the line for every shot that's coming in and blocking. And we seem to have lost that already. But overall, I don't think Wigan were great. They were just organised. They knew what they was doing. They had a plan. They executed it pretty well. We didn't know what our plan was, or if we did, we just wasn't doing it very well, or we were just too defensive, as in we're too scared to go forward. We're not taking risks, and sometimes you need to take the risks to get the rewards, and it just ain't happening. So let's see what happens on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think probably the one player that stood out for me for Wigan was Costello up front. As much as it pains me to say that a former cobbler is a decent footballer, he knew his job and he was just happy to put himself about, and it was a really good link-up and partnership that he had with the players that were around him. He was a very impressive player for me, and kind of feels like, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because it feels like anything that we add would probably improve. But he feels like he would be a perfect partner for somebody like Brad. Makes the right runs, is happy to do a little bit of extra work so that Brad can save himself for the important parts of the game. But I think that he really does well for what Wigan need and is a good performer.
Yeah, credit to Wigan. Well done. I feel they'll be up there based on what we saw on Saturday. Right, moving on. Peterborough United signed two players this week. We'll start with the first one, Matthew Garbutt. Sounds like it came out of nowhere. David Ball, ex-Posh player, is now an agent. Got in touch with Peterborough United, said, I've got this player. He's played in Eredivisie. Kiwi, box-to-box midfielder. Do you want to have a look? And it sounds like it's got sorted pretty quickly. Max, did you know anything about Matthew Garbutt before he signed?
You forgot to mention he scored against Ajax, which was enough for me. Good. From reading about him, obviously, we'd never watched him play. And that's the key thing is, again, we've signed an international that I don't think a lot of people knew about. Nobody really knows a lot about him. If you look at our portfolio of internationals, I don't think they've been very successful. Frith, the jury is still out on. But Wallen and Gustav, I think, can be put down as probably a mistake. That is concerning. But he has played in a high level. And from watching bits and bobs and reading about him, he seems to be quite an impressive midfielder, very technical, can play in a plethora of positions, whether that's as central defensive midfield, in the middle, or in creative midfield. He can play all three. I think really what I'm looking for in a midfielder is discipline, strength, and willingness to put your body on the line, commit to the team and play as a group. And I think Garbett will bring all three of those qualities. His disciplinary record is something that I am concerned about. He was banished to the bench for the remainder of the season and told to find a new club after a bust up with his manager. That was reported. And that's something that does concern me. Is he going to have a massive ego? Is he going to come in and think he's better than everybody else? And is that going to cause disruption? I don't know. Again, too early to tell. It's a brand new signing. I don't want to be negative. Looking at playing alone and putting the behavioural aspect behind, I think we've got a really good, talented midfielder. And I think he's going to be really integral to building the midfield back up and introducing some discipline, as I've just mentioned before with the three against Wigan. But again, too early to tell. Haven't seen a lot of him. But from what I've read, I think it's a good signing, especially on a free. He costs us no money.
Honestly, I'm not worried about the disciplinary thing. He got to 23 years old without a single blot against his name, and a specific manager coming into a relegation dogfight has decided to freeze out a player, probably just to stamp their authority on the squad, to be honest. And it wouldn't surprise me, based on the halfway line interview that Garbett did. He did not discuss that situation at all. But my speculative analysis, based on how he talked about the game and how much he just wants to get involved, is just that he said, look, I still want to be part of this side, and I don't see why I'm going to have to start coming off the bench now. I don't know why you're scapegoating me. Probably just had a falling out over that. We've seen managers at Posh do it. We saw Steve Evans do it to his own signings, like Colin Daniel. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. The halfway line interview is one of the things we have to go off. I mentioned this on our countdown to kickoff episode, but I'll say it again here because I know not everyone watches that Garbett strikes me as someone with the temperament we need for the battle we're in here. He is not going to be fazed by League One football. When asked about what it was like sharing a pitch with players like Jordan Henderson, let me tell you, he was diplomatic about it. But what I felt like he was thinking in his head was, I do not care who I'm playing against. I'm going to go out there and try and beat you. I do not care about what you've done in other games. I don't care what your pedigree is. I'm going to go out there and put out 100%. Because when Ewan was asking, I think he was hoping for an answer like, yeah, it was such an honour to share a pitch with Jordan Henderson. And that was not Matthew Garbett's attitude at all towards it. Just like, yeah, I just had a game of football to play. I rate that a lot. I think it will help in a midfield where we've got, well, youngsters or Archie, who's obviously quite quiet.
Yeah, do you know what? I think you're right. And I think that's probably the change that we've seen in the last two signings in Lolos and Garber, is that actually these are players that are confident in their ability. They're ready to take the mantle on their shoulders and aren't bothered if they put in poor performances because they know that they can bounce back from that and ultimately won't be bothered by the criticism. I think that Garbett strikes as that type of man that actually, where we've maybe looked a little bit weak and naive across the pitch, similar to what Sam Hughes offered last year. Sam Hughes knows his job. He does his job, doesn't he, right? And I think that Garbett is probably going to be that player as well. He knows what his role is going to be in the team. Give it 2 weeks so that he's bedded himself in with the squad. And I really struggle to get excited over signings when I don't know who they are, similar to when we sign players from non-league. But I think that this one's different. It's very clear that there were offers from the Championship, and he could play higher coming from the level that he's come from. It's not a sideways move to League One from the Eredivisie. It's not four leagues higher coming from Sweden, which is probably like step seven in England. He's moved down a level and hopefully he can dominate the midfield for Posh and dominate games for us. And when was the last time that one of our midfielders felt like a match winner? I'm trying to think of it. And I think Grant McCann probably was the last match winning midfielder. Somebody that could really take the game by the scruff of the neck. Hopefully, Garbutt can be similar to that and can win us games, because it doesn't look like we're getting that from the wingers and the strikers that we've got at the moment. The next man, looking at it, Tom Lees. This is really not one to get excited about, is it? Undisclosed wages, undisclosed contract length. He's here to do a job, isn't he? Hopefully, he can see us through for the 3 months while Sam Hughes is injured. And then whether he stays around, maybe there's a chance that he ends up joining in and becoming a coach at Posh, if that's the next stage in his career, and he can help Wallin, he can help Okagwe, he can help Nevitt. We know that from comments that we've had that his legs are gone, so we're going to have to probably play slightly differently. This is where I think that diamonds and things like that will potentially help somebody like Lees, but let's just wait and see. I don't want to write a guy off because somebody said that his legs have gone, because we saw Sam Hughes come in, and although his legs aren't gone, he improved us last season ultimately. To keep us safe-ish, hopefully Tom Lees can stop the rot more than anything, because I think that's what we need right now.
If you ask Huddersfield fans, which I've done, I know a couple of them, this idea of him losing a yard of pace is one that they share. So over the course of his time with Huddersfield, he's not the defender he once was. But the word-for-word quotes that I've got here next to me, stalwart defender, great leader, smart, given his pace, will probably need someone around him to mop up, which is an interesting comment. And who better at mopping up than Sam Hughes when he's back? But for now, yeah, he's got a job to do. I thought his interview with the club was good. And someone just older around the building is what we need right now, isn't it? Just in this absolute rut that we're in. Because gone are the days where Fergie's 35, 36 years old and training with the players and, you know, has a certain amount of connection to them as a recent pro. The gap between Fergie and these 20-year-olds is now massive. And having someone who's 34 come in, I think gives that, you know, somewhere in the middle, some kind of, you know, leadership figure just by virtue of age, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I think that people will say, oh, he's too far, we've got such a young squad. But I think that was where Jed failed, is that Jed wasn't with them day in, day out. Jed's a goalkeeper. He trains with the goalkeepers. Goalkeepers don't regularly get involved in the first team training, in the movements, in the patterns of play. They'll pull the academy goalkeepers and give them the runaround for that sort of thing. Tom Lees will be there with that first team squad training every single day. This is a man that's got 600 appearances in the EFL. We've been crying out for experience, so it would be wrong to knock the player that comes in with the experience. Why has he got 600 appearances? Well, he's 34 years old. That's what it comes down to. I think the only concern that I have is, why did we need a second opinion on this medical that he's had? That's my only concern. Are we going to be managing minutes from the very start? Is he going to be somebody that comes in disastrous and then gets injured, this flare-up of whatever previous injury he had? I hope not, because it would be very typical of Posh to sign somebody with loads of experience and then they then end up on the touchline for 2-3 months, similar to what Sam Hughes did.
Let's hope not. Let's hope we've got our next Stephen Taylor or our next Mark Beavers. Had to think about that one for a second. Right, moving on Tuesday night, we play Barnsley at home. There's no rest for Peterborough United, and we've got to pick ourselves back up. Four games in, four losses, 3 days of rest. Ashley, could this be the beginning of the turnaround?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure that it will be. We've just spoken about how experienced Lees is. Barnsley have signed David McGoldrick, and he is probably one of the most experienced strikers in the EFL at the moment. And it's got a great record. And my concern comes with him and him coming up against Wallin and Okagwe, and I think that he will have a field day. I think it's going to be another one of those performances where we just need to see signs. Max talks about it quite a lot, doesn't he? Just seeing something positive. I hope that we don't get battered. I'd like to walk out of London Road on Tuesday night having seen a couple of positives. When we left the last time, it felt like the players were defeated. It felt like they were accepting relegation and disappointment. I feel like we're slightly further on from that, from the Luton game, in actually that they're starting to see things. And there's a slight tide turning in the fan base. But until we've got players ready and we've got Lolos ready to play, Garbutt ready to play, and Lee's ready to play for 60, 70 minutes, I think that we're just going to have to manage expectations and ultimately decisions of what happens and the results that we get from it. And it may be another 4 weeks. I just hope that it's not too late in the pile. But we know that it won't be too late because Burton survived, and Burton were absolutely rotten for pretty much 6 months last season. So there's always a chance, isn't there, that you can fight yourself to safety.
Yeah, it's an awfully long season, isn't it? And that's the big thing, is that actually, although these results matter, teams drop off, get on form, drop off form, fluctuate throughout the season, and it's awfully long, isn't it? Right now, I don't feel too negative. But then again, when do I ever? I think with the Barnsley game, I said at the start of the season that I would be happy, not happy, of course I wouldn't be happy, but I expected 4 points throughout August. Now, that is extremely low. Don't think I'd be never thought I'd be saying that, but 4 points throughout August. For me, Barnsley probably could be a game where we could pick up a point, not because Barnsley are good, but sometimes I just feel like we are due a result. I can't remember the last time we even won. You know, Wembley.
Even
before that, yeah. So you know, that is months. We are due something, a strand of happiness, and Barnsley have just fallen victim to that blind sense of optimism that we could get a result here, whether it's a point or a win. But I would be happy if we beat Exeter at the end of the month and then draw with either Bradford or Barnsley at home, two home games that we could really take advantage on and of. And that's something that I am really hoping that we can do. I'm hoping we can see more of Lolos. I'm hoping we can see even a bit more of Lisby, perhaps coming off the bench and making an impact, bringing him on earlier. And I'm looking to see us play some better football than we have been at home and making up for that Luton performance. Because again, first half, even maybe a little bit more than the first half, there was nothing in it. And then we fell apart. But hopefully we can take that first half performance and build on that and see more of it against Barnsley on Tuesday night.
We normally have some good games against Barnsley, to be fair. Obviously, normally when we're away from home, the last couple of years have been some good results, you know, getting to the playoffs, etc. So I'm looking for the buzz. I'm looking that Barnsley at home, we could have that little bit of success against them. I'm hoping. I'll take a draw, you know, because a draw is a success, yeah, at the moment. But just it's early in the season, still excited. I'm hoping that something will go our way, you know. A bit of a ricochet bounce that comes off, I don't know, Brad's arse or something. Just something that to give us a little bit of hope, a little bit of something to get excited about. But, yeah, again, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully the crowd is a decent crowd again. Excuse me. And they give us the team the support that they need. Not necessarily what they deserve, what they need. Because we're all quick at criticising people, players, this, whatever. But, you know, let's try and build up a bit of confidence. And we can play our part by getting behind them rather than getting down on them like a few did the other day. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to Tuesday night. Can't wait. And I'm hoping for a decent result, if I'm honest.
I would love to say that this will be the turning point for Posh, but we're about to do our predictions and I have nowhere to hide because I predicted us to lose. We continue the Next Level Barbell Club Predictions League. All the hosts every week will do their predictions. And of course, you can submit yours online on uptheposhcast.com. Enter your name, your email address, your score and your first Posh goal scorer. There's plenty of time to be involved. You could easily win the league even if you haven't predicted yet. £250 cash prize at the end of the year or monthly prizes for a box at London Road for a game. I have us down as Peterborough United 1, Barnsley 2, Clyde Lolos to score the first Posh goal. I think that, as Del said, it will be an entertaining game as it often is against Barnsley. I just don't think we're going to turn the corner yet. I think it will be a positive performance in some areas. And it'll be nice, I think, to see our first open play goal in the league. Del, what have you got as your prediction?
I'm going for my trusted, not so trusted, 2-2 draw. I'll take a draw at this point. I'd be happy with delighted with a win, but, you know, small steps. So I'm going to take a draw. I'm going to go 2-2. And I'm going to stick with Big Bad Brad for the first goal. And it'll be an open play goal, as you said.
Well, I am on the same boat as Harry, but I think they were going to concede one more. I've gone for a 3-1. And I think that it's going to be Lisby that is going to get a late consolation goal in the game. I think that we will go 3-0 down. And then I think that we'll get something in the 87th minute. Then we'll probably show a few minutes of promise like we have done, like we did at Cardiff, like we sort of did at Wigan a little bit where we got the ball in the box. But it will sum to nothing and we will lose 3-1. And I'll try not to be disappointed because that's kind of what I expect at the moment. I expect that we're going to go 2 down within 25 minutes. If we can stop doing that, then I'll start to be a little bit more positive. But that's where we're at the moment. And that's why I've gone with a 3-1.
I've gone with a 1-1 draw. And I think McGoldrick will score in the first 10 minutes. And Lolos will be our first goal scorer. And he will score just as we've come out for the second half. And I think we're going to have a really entertaining end to the game, like a basketball match, back and forth. But neither team are going to secure the winner. That's what I optimistically hope for. A point at Barnsley at home. And hopefully then can pick up a win against either Bradford or Exeter later on for the 4 points that I'd hope for in August.
And for those watching on YouTube, you can now see on screen the remaining three host scores. But I'll say them anyway, because for our dedicated audio-only listeners, John has gone for Posh 1, Barnsley 1, with Brad to score first. Lods has gone Posh 0, Barnsley 4. And Charlie has gone with the only host predicting us to win, Posh 2, Barnsley 0, with Clayley Lolos to get the opening goal for Peterborough United. And we have a special prediction from Barnsley super fan and YouTube content creator Callum Fowler, who's kindly given us his prediction.
And Callum Fowler's prediction is 3-1 to Barnsley. So same result as me, and he's got Phillips scoring their first goal. I think it's worth noting, Harry, that the opposition fans are currently second in the table behind Max. That sort of says where we're at in the moment with the predictions league. That includes that we didn't even have a prediction from an Accrington fan because they haven't got any.
Well, that gives me some hope that if Max is top of the predictions league and he has us to draw on Tuesday night, that this might be Peterborough United getting off the mark this season. Deary me, this is how far we've fallen, hoping for a draw at home on a Tuesday night. I think we're there. Do we have any other business for this? Oh, Ashley has some many other business.
I absolutely do. It is Sunday. It's currently 20 past 10, and myself and Lods, as well as Shannon and Imogen, went over to Nottingham today to watch the women's team, and they won 4-1, their first league game of the season, and they are currently sat top of the table. I was absolutely delighted with the performance. Neve Reynolds got a hat-trick, and Neve Connor scored from a corner. It was a great performance. It was very exciting. We have also, earlier on today, recorded an interview, myself and Lods, with Jake Paul, the manager, which will be out on Thursday. Midday, maybe 6 p.m. potentially for everybody to listen. I think the only other thing that if people are listening into this one, I would simply love it if we can get really big numbers down there next Sunday to Pimm's Park for the first home game of the season. They're playing Lincoln United. It's a relatively local game for pretty much everyone now that they're in Peterborough. I'd love to see some big numbers in there and just start enjoying the women's team because the women's, they're great. It's exciting. We discussed on the interview with Jake is that if people take it for what it is, you'll enjoy it a hell of a lot more than trying to compare it to the men's game.
I'll tell you what, to get a bit more interest, Dan, I've got 4 tickets to give away for the women's game. You know, all you need to do is just reply to this email, whatever, to the email, to this tweet that when it goes out is, I'm interested in a women's game, and that we'll just randomly pick 4 people. How's that sound?
Sounds good. Very generous, Dale. I think we're there. And as ever, up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast. Top of the host predictions league. You'll never sing that.
I need to go and do my ironing, otherwise I'm going to wear a fucking dirty shirt to work.